The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to XYZ, the best fucking podcast in the world. Sometimes we talk about CNC and automation and so on. Other times we get very distracted, but either way, we have a lot of fun.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, just in case you don't know, I'm your host, Aaron Goff from Goff Custom, and I'm joined here by Craig Lockwood from Chop Knives. I forgot your name there for a second, mate. Clearly, I like you.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, we did our sort of intros in the very first episode, which was what? I don't know, would it be episode 9 or 10 now, something like that?
Yeah.
So, for those who don't know, we are both knife makers. I'm massively inspired by Aaron's, the way Aaron works, because he's not a traditional knife maker. You know, he's not pounding away on an anvil and that kind of thing. He's doing things the modern way, using CNC machines. And that's a way that I want to sort of be moving into, and I see that that's the future. So this podcast is me picking Aaron's brains, basically. So if you want to see some great content regarding that kind of stuff, go and look at Aaron's YouTube channel, and also his Instagram, because there's lots of good stuff on there.
Thanks for the plugs, mate. Jeez.
Well, that's the way it is. It's the way it is. How have you been this week? What have you been up to?
Good. It's been productive. I'm very fucking tired, though. Our puppy is a lot of work. She's like 8 months old, and she was supposed to be like house trained and all that kind of stuff. And no,
she'll be playing with you.
Yeah, she'll be playing with you, and then she'll just like walk two steps away and look you right in the eyes while she pees on the floor.
Oh, I've got 2-year-old twins. I'm used to that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, jeez.
But on the work side, it's been going well.
Good. How did you get? I know you wanted to put up a lot of knives, sort of ready to go by the end of the month. Did you get to the goal?
I did. Yes.
Excellent.
I had to finish some knives the day after, but that's pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll call that a win.
Yeah. So I was wondering, how do things work? Because if you go on your website, people can choose their handle materials and colors, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So do you finish the blades completely, and then you have a bunch of handle materials just all ready to go? So you literally just assemble in when an order comes in. Is that how it works?
Yes and no. Like right now I'm trying to assemble full knives ahead of time and then just keep a couple of knives in stock.
Because you know the popular model. I see, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then... basically like make new knives to replace the ones that sell.
Hmm.
But yeah, this time around I did do exactly what you said. I did handle scales and stuff ready to go. But handle scales are actually pretty quick to machine. So I can kind of do them on demand. You know, I can like machine one. It takes like 45 minutes to machine a handle scale, so I can machine one while I'm assembling the last knife.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I can just kind of do that. So yeah, that's not a terrible way to go.
Have you come up with a way yet to, so I'm imagining you're assembling your handles, and I know you're using Corby bolts like I do.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the final things there is to sand back down the head of that bolt back down,
yes,
to be flush with the, have, because everything of yours is so precise and exactly the same size, have you come up with a way of machining those down? So you do up your bolts, and then machine them back down.
Yes and no. That's something I've been working on for a while, actually. So, like, one concept I was working on was that I would basically put, like, these little hollow cups. So think of, like, a pin, like a dowel pin, that has a hole drilled in one end. And I would start machining the handle scales, machine the counter bores for where the corbulots would normally go. Yeah. And then these metal pins would get hammered and glued into place. And then the machining process would continue, and I'd actually machine their heads off them as part of the machining operation. But then you've got handle scales with these metal inserts, but there's no way to, like, attach them to the blade. So the idea was that it would be a press fit. I would actually put, so there'd be, each rivet would be three pieces. So you'd have, like, the two cups that are parts of the handle scale, and then you would have a separate dowel pin that goes in the middle, and then the whole thing would get pressed together. Yeah, and that's something I'm still working on. The only problem is that I found that it was very, very hard to get the finish that I wanted on the heads of the, pins as I'm machining them. So I just end up having to sand them anyway. And if I'm sanding them anyway, then I may as well just use corby bolts.
Yeah, yeah. Has anybody requested sort of normal bolts so they could have a bunch of different handles and they could change the handles over as they see fit and everything?
Yeah, people have asked about that. I don't like that idea. You know, like, it's going to come loose, or, you know, you're going to break something, or because the bolts are actually quite small.
Yeah.
You know, the little corby bolts are somewhat delicate. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of that idea personally.
Right, fair enough. So you got lots done. That's the main thing. You've got them up on the website and they're available. That's good news.
Yeah, which is great. And they're not going to be available for long. I think I'm pretty close to being sold out already, which is fantastic. But yeah, it's a whole new world at the moment, because I'm really trying to do things a different way. With like a full on production schedule each day of each week. I know exactly what I'm doing. And it's actually been pretty nice. Like, last year I was, like, you know, just so under the pump that it was like, okay, today I have to, like, force myself to work a bunch, and tomorrow I'm going to have to force myself to work a bunch. And then the day after that, and then, you know, I just never felt a break coming.
Yeah.
Whereas with the new schedule, I can be like, you know, today I have to work a bunch, but tomorrow I can do other things.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. Which is really nice. It's nice to have that.
Knife making getting in the way business.
Yeah. Well, I end up still, you know, doing knife making related things, of course, because it's what interests me. But, like, yeah, it's nice to have that mental break, you know.
Mm. Makes sense. Yeah. How about you? What have I been up to? I've been trying to. I mean, I work on batches of knives, like 50, 60 of the same knife, especially for restaurants, that kind of thing. And it, you know, it's not the most creative thing. There's the, you know, the creative process at the beginning, coming up with the design. But once you actually get into production, it's pretty much working like a small factory. So what I did last week or the week before, I wanted to make like a one-off, just one-off knife that could be quite sort of creative with it. And I think we talked about it last week, where sort of, you know, make a cool video for it and all that kind of thing.
Yep.
So I made this chef knife, and the whole purpose was it was about sort of saving the oceans, and it's more of a sort of awareness thing, I suppose, about, you know, the amount of plastics that we throw away, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the handle to this knife is using plastics that are pulled from the ocean. Obviously, it's not even a drop in the ocean, the amount of plastics being used, but it's a talking point. That's the whole point. Okay. And I'd etched like a whale and the calf on the blade, right? And it's quite a cool looking knife. It's something quite different. So yeah, then I come to make the video, and I thought, right, I'm gonna have lots of fun with this. And I've got this whole thing of if you sell the story, you sell the knife. That's, you know, especially when it comes to these one offs, people like to know a story or a theme behind her, at least.
Right.
So I went, obviously a water theme. So I went out and I bought a big fish tank, I let it settle for a few days. There was no bubbles or anything like that at all. And the idea was there was going to be this sort of 20, 30 second promo video for this knife. Get it sold. Move on to the next sort of creative idea. Anyway, it took me about 4 or 5 hours to film what was literally a 3 second piece of footage that I could then slow down to make into a 15 second slot of footage.
And you probably spent more on the fish tank and all that shit than you did on the knife. Like,
time-wise, not quite, but I mean, the thing is, I enjoy doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's the mental break, like I was just saying, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. And it's sort of flexing a different sort of creative muscle, I suppose. But photographing knives is notoriously difficult anyway because, you know, they're shiny and they're reflective.
Yeah, yeah, I keep meaning to do a video about that at some point.
It is difficult. It's really difficult. And
yeah, product photography in general is really hard. And people aren't familiar with a lot of the concepts that you need to make it work, especially for knives.
Yeah.
Like the idea of like flagging and moving lights and stuff. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it is difficult. And, you know, photography is all about light. And the fact that we've got this shiny surface that we're trying to sort of capture, then put that inside a glass box, which is even more reflective. Couple that with the shitty little lights that I've got, and it was just like, oh man. So the move was this knife was going to be sort of floating through the water, and you would hear these whale sounds, and it was going to be slow mo, and it was going to be all quite cool. But it soon turned out, as soon as you start moving the knife underwater, you get these tiny little bubbles, and then when it comes to editing, it just doesn't look clean, it looks terrible. Right. So I thought, what I'll do, I'll just plunge the knife into the water quickly. I think 240 frames a second I was using, so I could slow that down into a 30 frames a second project, and I'd get obviously that slowdown speed. But what I was finding is a knife, as well as being obviously reflective, it's streamlined. So if you plunge it into water, it's not really going to even cause a ripple in the water, let alone a bubble.
Right.
So I was like, oh right, okay. So what I was having to do was sort of slap the blade in, you know, the cheek of the blade into the water to create like this pocket of air, which would then cause bubbles, and then turn the knife quickly onto the side so you could see the engraved side of the knife. And that took me hours and hours to get right, because every time you did it, you'd need to wait 10 minutes for the water to settle again. And it was just like, it was fun to do, but yeah, it took a lot of time. But I think it paid off. So the I put the knife for sale, sold it, you know, reasonably quickly, within a few hours of the video going up. So it did its job. So nice. I had so much fun with that. I was like, well, I need another theme to play with now. And it's one of these projects that I sort of do on the side when I, you know, I'm waiting for resins to dry or, you know, ovens to heat up. I can work on this one-off knife. And I've started, and it's a space-themed knife.
Ooh.
So I've managed to get some cool stuff. So I've got some micarta that was apparently used on the last Apollo mission. Nice. as a shielding material.
Right.
And that's taken directly from Cape Canaveral, where they take old stuff to decommission. And a fellow knife maker who actually listens to Knife Talk got in touch with me and said he can get some of this stuff if I want it. He works at NASA, and he got me some of this stuff. So that's really cool. So using micarta on the handle that's been to space. But also I've etched like an astronaut floating in space on the blade, which looks pretty cool. But I've also, this is the killer. I've managed to get some moon rock as well, which is basically lunar meteorite. And it's like approved stuff. You can check on the Royal Meteorological Society database, apparently. And it will confirm that this is moon rock that has landed on Earth. I've been thinking of ways how I can incorporate that into a handle. And this is a full tang knife. For those who don't know, a full tang knife will have a handle. The steel going right through the handle, so that you basically sandwich it with scales, with handles, as opposed to like a stick tang where you can put a block of wood onto the stick. This will also have some steel exposed. So how would I incorporate that into the handle? So I've been doing a bit of sort of mold making and pouring resins. And the idea is I'll have a bit of this moon rock either side on the bolster of the knife. And I was thinking the best way to do some mold. So I've done molds in the past where I've molded handles. It's they've been very much hit or miss. So I've got the mold making resins, the silicone stuff, and you make the mold and you can pour your resin into that. So I was thinking, what about 3D printing a mold with flexible filament?
Mm-hmm.
I've never used flexible filament before. And I was just wondering whether you have.
I haven't, but you have a Prusa Mini, right?
Yes, which apparently can do a flex material.
Yeah, but it's a Bowden extruder, which means that the extruder is separate from the hot end.
Yep.
So it has to push the filament down a Teflon tube to get to the hot end. And those
yes.
are notoriously not great for flexible filaments.
And apparently you need to turn retraction off, so it would be stringy as hell.
Right.
But people have done it.
Okay.
But I was thinking that, and I was thinking, okay, let's maybe try printing some. But then I thought, well, that just seems a bit of a sort of over-engineering the situation, because you're then going to have the print lines anyway in your mold.
Yeah.
So you then have to, you know, use some sort of filler material and all that. And I thought, well, what's the point? So I've just ordered just a silicone, the liquid silicone, so I can just make molds. So what I'll do, I'll 3D print a tray to pour the mold into and do it that way, I think, and just have some, use some Mike Carter or something then to actually make the relief in the mold.
Right.
So it's been an experimental week of working on this knife, but I'm really excited. It's really got me sort of perked up again about being creative and doing something different. And I think this space knife is going to be, you know, something a bit different, a bit special. So yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
I think it's super important to give yourself that space to be creative, you know?
Yeah.
Without it, like, I think your work tends to really stagnate, right? So
yeah. It's just like before, you know, being a knife maker, I was, you know, sort of web developer. And any companies that I worked for, they'd have what they call like a free Friday. So some of them were once a month or somewhere every Friday. So every Friday afternoon, they'd encourage you to work on your own stuff.
Yeah, 20% time, as they call it at Google.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of thing. And I think it's a great way to learn more, because you're not doing what you do every day, the run-of-the-mill stuff. You're generally looking into sort of new technologies or new ways of working. So yeah, I'm going to try and incorporate more of that into my sort of working week. And hopefully have a bit more fun and just be a lot more creative. I've got some great ideas for this video for the space knife, by the way.
Are you going to take your aquarium and make it a vacuum chamber?
No, that would be cool. I'm faking that, basically. I'm faking
right.
it. So I've got like a turntable for photography that turns super, super slow. So I'm standing the knife in there, recording, again, 240 frames a second, this turning of the knife, which I can then cut out and composite that into various things. So you've got this knife almost as if it's
right.
in space, you know. It's going to be quite cooler, I hope. Probably another 8 hours down the drain, but it's cool learning something new anyway.
Yeah, that does sound fun. I have a couple of ideas for one-offs that I would like to do, or like limited runs, I was thinking, but they just haven't happened yet. I'm trying to get my process. I mean, we talked about this a little while ago. I'm trying to design the next version of my process that will be a lot more flexible. Because right now, the CNC stuff, you know, you have to make all these fixtures, and, you know, all that stuff takes just a tremendous amount of time. So, like, trying to work out a system that requires less changes to make new things. It's slowly happening.
I mean, with regards to sort of CNCing, what have I been doing this week? So the lasering of the blades, that's CNC. It's a laser, uses a galvo, and it's a similar sort of system. But I've been completely frustrated with, again, having to go back to Windows machines that do this. And I'm finding lots of inexpensive machines. I mean, my really cheap little CNC router here and this laser machine, this Chinese laser, will only work with Windows software. And as somebody who uses a Mac every day, I just find it really jarring to then go in and I've got this old, you know, Windows 10 laptop that, you know, boots up and I'm just like, oh, this is so, everything is just bad about it.
Honestly, man, like you don't need a lot of performance. I would say just like buy a couple of like old desktops off eBay and set them up permanently connected to each machine and run Windows. Like you don't even need to activate Windows. Like Windows will just have a watermark, you know?
Yes, in the bottom right there, yeah.
Yeah, just, and, you know.
That's probably the way to do it. Just have these machines dedicated, a PC dedicated to each machine. But yeah, I mean, I've even tried using like Parallels on my Mac, so it'll run Windows. But you have issues with the USB drivers on some of these things, and it's just hate it. This isn't the idea of the future we were sold. It really isn't.
No, I agree with you. Having a computer as a controller for a machine that just like runs Windows or whatever, it's not great. It's not a good time, really.
Yeah.
Linux machines are better, but like, yeah. So I've done some messing around with Linux CNC and Centroid CNC in the past. Both. So Linux CNC runs on Linux, as you might guess, and Centroid runs on Windows 10. You know what? Both of them are made a lot less jarring by setting it up to boot straight into the controller program.
Right. Yeah.
So you're like, you don't even see Windows. It boots, and then the control program launches immediately, and then you're just in the control program, and that feels pretty nice. Like if you have a little dedicated, cheap PC.
Yeah.
So like maybe that's something to look into, but like, yeah, it's still.
Still Windows and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, like, my Fidals, like, the computers on those are, like, genuinely ancient, but, you know, you turn the machine on and it just turns on, and it's there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's got that single purpose, knows what it's there to do.
Yeah.
And you've got a kick-ass mechanical keyboard, which all the hipsters are falling over for now as well. So,
yeah, it actually is, like, genuinely pretty decent. And the buttons for jogging and everything, like, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Craig.
Yeah, sure.
If you had an unlimited budget.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that idea is nice, right? What machines would you be buying?
Unlimited budget. I think a super high powered laser to cut my profiles.
Mm-hmm. So that's like 250k right there, 300k.
Yeah, and a fair bit of space and a huge electricity consumption, I know. But I'd some sort of VMC to do bevels, pretty much like yourself.
Some sort of VMC? You don't obsessively like visit machine tool websites?
I don't. I mean, I look occasionally on websites just to drool over, you know, what I could never afford. I mean, those Haas machines look really quite sexy, and you know, but even I've been even looking at like the Tormach, that, you know, that is a PNC 440, which
you
is
can't
the
say
low
unlimited
end.
Budget and Tormach in the same sentence.
I know, but when you're when you're a complete newbie like myself,
right?
You know, it imagine me spending, you know, hundreds of thousands on this super duper machine and just scratching the surface, there'd be people wanting to rip my eyeballs out. They really would. So I think, yeah, start with something that I'll be crashing a lot and that kind of thing. I mean, dream machines, unlimited budget. I think maybe between them, I'm, you know, for knife making anyway, I think I'd probably be pretty set. Have you seen the I'm thinking the way that I think now. I'm thinking, oh, I need a drill press, and obviously I wouldn't. I'd be doing all this on the VMC. But just as an aside, have you seen those drill presses that they've now made sort of smart?
No.
Yeah. Who makes them? Nova Works, I think it is. So, as well as having like a DRO, you know, for depths and that kind of thing.
A digital readout for those not knowing. So it tells you like how deep you're drilling.
Yes. But it's also got a bunch of sensors in it as well. So it you can set depths, and there's like a digital break on it, so it'll break at the right time. It'll turn on and off without having to, you know, to reach around for the on and off buttons.
That sounds a little dangerous.
Yeah, it does a bit, but it looks really, really cool.
So, like, as soon as you move the handle down to start drilling, it just turns itself on.
Exactly, yes, yeah. And there's lots of other these little features that I can't quite remember what they are now, but I just remember seeing it going, wow, that's pretty cool. But anyway, I wouldn't have one because the VMC would be able to do all these kind of things. I think that's probably it. I mean, what about yourself? Unlimited budget. You've just won.
Dreaming small there, mate.
I am. But like I said, can you imagine getting a big old warehouse, filling it with the best machines and not knowing what to do with any of them?
Yeah, it sounds like a fun time to me.
What, you're unlimited, but you've just won $400 million on some super duper lottery, or I don't know, God, on shares in GameStop. You've got $400
exactly.
million.
Dogecoin.
Yeah,
well, so the thing is, like, I know exactly, because, like, I was just saying, you know, what, you don't spend time on machine tool websites obsessively looking at machines? Yeah, I do that for sure. Yeah, so, like, for the VMC, it'd be an Okuma Genos M560V, which is a 40-inch by 20-inch dual bridge-style VMC. So rather than the table moving in X and Y, the table only moves in Y back and forth, and then the spindle itself moves in X and Z, which means that it's extremely rigid. And this thing weighs like, I think it's like 19,500 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, drop in the ocean. You've got 400 million in your pocket there.
Well, that's the weight. That's not the price.
Oh, right. I was going to say. That seems really cheap. And I was thinking, what, you got a lot of money here.
No, they're not that expensive. They're around 130K US, which for that kind of machine is not that expensive. Crazy to say that. But yeah, they're really nice. They're really nice. Or alternatively, a Makino F5, which is a CNC machine, like a vertical machining center, specifically designed from the ground up for doing hard milling. And that thing is like overkill in every single way. So it has linear scales on all axes, which means that, so like in a normal CNC, if you heat the machine up, like you're, let's say you turn the heat up to like 30 degrees in your shop, all of the ball screws will get longer. So, because, you know, whenever you heat any metal, it expands, right? So your ball screws get longer, and then that means that, you know, your dimensions on one side of the table versus the other, those two points might be, you know, 0.005 inches further apart because your ball screws have gotten longer. But in the Makino, so they tackle that two ways. The ball screws are pre-tensioned, which means they actually stretch them in advance so that they don't really grow as you heat them up, which is nuts.
Like pre-worn
and
jeans.
Then,
like pre-worn jeans.
Well, when I say they stretch them, they actually keep them in constant tension, which is super cool. Like they have mounts at either end of the ball screw, and they actually like pull them. So as the ball screw heats up, it just loses some of that tension rather than actually changing dimensions. And then they have linear scales on each of the axes. So they actually have, rather than just like moving the ball screw and assuming that the machine moves that far, they actually have a second feedback mechanism to read exactly how far the machine has moved and then to correct for thermal issues. It's nuts.
How big is this thing? How big a space are you going to need for one of these?
It's actually not that big. I think it's like 10 feet by 10 feet.
Right, okay.
I haven't seen one in a while. I saw one at the Canadian Machining and Technology Show, which is, that's very fun. I try to go to that whenever I can. It's every 2 years up here, and there's just like Yeah, what someone told me, it was like more than 5 million pounds worth of machinery, like in terms of weight, wow, on the floor in one shot. Oof. So it's like machines from every manufacturer all running, cutting stuff. You know, it's a very, very fun time to go and check all these machines out.
Lots of men wearing Crocs, I assume.
No, why would you assume that? That's such a weird assumption.
You see all these machinists on YouTube. They're all wearing Crocs, all of them.
What? Yeah, okay. Never trust a machinist that's wearing Crocs. I'll tell you that
Fair
much.
Enough, yeah, yeah. So what else? So you've got this huge mill. What else are you getting?
Wire EDM. I'd love a wire EDM.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So for those that don't know what a wire EDM is, it's think of like one of those wires that you use to cut cheese, you know, except it cuts metal in 3 dimensions and sometimes 5 dimensions. And they are extremely pricey and extremely accurate and quite costly to run, but they are pretty amazing machines.
Hmm.
Like, nice. If you need to cut a 1 millimeter hole, you know, through a really thick piece of steel, like a wire EDM is one of the machines that will help you do that.
Cool. I've just found, we were talking about that drill press,
mm-hmm.
And I've changed my mind. So
you
it's
do
really
want
cool.
It now.
It's got all these cool things on here. I don't. Simply because as soon as you open the page from the manufacturer, it says, click here for the firmware upgrade.
Mm.
This is a drill press. You don't want to be upgrading your firmware every other week. But it's got these cool... I'll just quickly run through a feature set that it's got. So it's got like a slow start for pilot holes, and it'll sense when you need to speed up. It's got digital stops coupled with the DRO for right. accurate and repeatable actions. So once you set it up, let's say you're drilling holes for your Corby bolts, for example, you set up, you bang, 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 you keep going. It's got a load readout, so it tells you about the load, and it's got some electronic braking, so if you're pulling down too hard, it'll automatically keep the load perfectly for you by slowing down that. It does sound cool, but it's that, click here for the important firmware upgrade. It's quite scary, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of weird. Like, you know, we talked about this previously. I'm a little bit of a Luddite. Like, things that are supposed to be simple, I like it when they're simple.
Mm.
You know, like, I don't want my fucking light bulbs to need a firmware update. You know, like, I just... One of my friends is obsessive with home automation. He was saying the other day he's going to get Wi-Fi blinds. And I know he listens to the show, so he knows I'm giving him shit. He's going to get, like, Wi-Fi controlled blinds. And I'm just like, I don't understand why. Like, just get up and use your fucking hand and put the blind. You know.
Get one of those clappers. Remember, like, I'm from the 80s there?
No, even that's too much. That's too much automation as well. I like simple stuff that just works forever, you know?
Yeah, that surprises me, that. It really does surprise me.
Well, I don't know, like... In the shop, I want things to be, like, as automated and shiny as possible. But, like, in the rest of my life, I just want things to be simple. You know, in the shop, I want things to be simple, too. But, you know, as simple as they can be while still being extremely productive, you know?
Yeah. You want things to enhance, not necessarily to bog you down, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, and, like, a similar theme. Like, you probably wouldn't guess that I don't have email on my phone. I don't have Instagram on my phone. Like, I don't want my life to be intruded upon by technology. I want to control the technology.
Yeah. Okay. Sitting there in your tin hat, I can see you.
It's not so tin, lead.
It's lead. we've had some questions from listeners. First one, hey fellas, love the pod. I'm trying to see who this is from, actually.
Oh, sorry, I didn't copy that across.
No worries. Hey, fellas, love the podcast. I've listened to every episode and find myself eagerly awaiting each week. Wow. I'm a knife maker and leather worker with some CNC experience. I'm pretty familiar with Fusion 360 and I use it regularly. I'm looking for a desktop machine for leather work to cut leather, drill holes, carve patterns. Do you have any recommendations? Also advice on tooling for using a CNC for leather if you have any experience. Thanks, guys. Love the show. So I think with leather, you'd use like a drag knife, wouldn't you, rather than a like a spinning bit?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know that a drag knife would actually be powerful enough to like cut through thick leather. I think you'd be starting to look at like oscillating knives at that point.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know if you've seen an oscillating knife. They're very cool. They literally oscillate. They go up and down. Yeah. But then you have like ultrasonic oscillating knives and stuff too. I don't know. Personally, I would probably tend toward a CO2 laser for this.
Good point. Yeah.
Right? Because the CO2 laser will cut leather quite nicely. It leaves a really cool finish on the cut surfaces too, because it kind of chars them. So they end up dark.
Hmm.
And like that's often one process that you do with leatherworking anyway, is to like darken the cut edges.
Yes. Yeah.
And you could drill stitching holes and that kind of stuff. And I believe you can etch as well. So you don't have to necessarily cut all the way through. I believe you can do some etching.
I think there's a bunch of knife makers who use CO2 lasers for their leather work. Yeah, and it looks really impressive. Looks really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. I hadn't thought of the CO2 lasers for that. It's a good point.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is it's gonna smell bad. It's gonna smell really bad. So like
you're burning cows. Yeah. Stink.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's gonna stink.
So like make sure you've got good fume extraction. You know, like a lot of the machines do come with fume extractors, but they're kind of shit. Like you might want to upgrade that a little bit. But yeah, I think. Personally, I would say CO2 laser. I don't think you're going to have much luck machining with like an end mill for leather. I think it's going to squish too much, for lack of a better word.
And I don't know whether with a CO2 laser, whether you could do any sort of like 3D engraving on there. I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought it's pretty much, you know, a cutting machine, you know.
You can, you kind of can, because you can do like etches where you do like multiple passes, but like I don't know if I'd want to try that on leather, and it also doesn't look that great. And
yeah, it's a good one. We had another one from Muspell Knives, MUSPELL _ knives. Hi guys, really enjoying the podcast, so thank you very much. I'm considering trying to print 3D models of my knife blanks for prototyping and for shipping to customers when working on custom knives. What would be an affordable 3D printer that's available in Europe? The knives will be 2.5D, so 3.5 millimeters thick without scales.
Yeah, so I think he's talking about just printing the actual blade rather than the...
Yes, yeah.
And I think the biggest complication is just going to be the size, because like I think you and I would both say like a Prusa Mini, especially in Europe, or if you need a little bit bigger size, the Mark III.
The Mark III, yeah.
Yeah. But the problem is that the Mark III only, I think it's an 8.5-inch square build plate.
Yeah, so you'd have to print handles and blades separately and attach them and so on. But I've been printing prototypes this week for my folding knife, which I've been working on. And obviously that's pretty small. It's for the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the Prusa that I've got dimensionally, it's pretty much amazing. With PLA, I've just been really surprised. And I heard you, Snigger, then. As a machinist, you're like, well, how dimensionally correct
actually,
is that?
I'm not surprised, honestly. Like, so my printer is a Delta printer, which are kind of notoriously not great.
Look super cool.
They do look super cool, but mine sounds like a barrel of bolts rolling down a driveway when it's printing. It's like, and it dimensionally it's still okay, but I think that a Cartesian printer, so you know, one where each axis is just straight, like the Prusa Mini, is a much better choice for when you're trying to get like accurate surfaces, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I would say, like, I don't know. So my knives are about 9 inches long. I don't know what that is in real units. So I think it might just fit on the Mark III if you're printing diagonally across the print bed. But if you're doing anything longer than that, then yeah, you're going to run out of space, unfortunately. Yeah, so that's 22 centimeters. 228 millimeters.
Talking about space and 3D printing, I saw a video this week. I spoke about him last week, actually. Bob from I Like to Make Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a massive Star Wars nut, and he's been making this R2-D2 for like years, and it's a bit of an ongoing joke how, you know, he'll occasionally go back to this R2-D2, which is incredible what he's already done. But he was making Mandalorian helmets, and they were too big for his 3D printer. I didn't realize that with Prusa Slicer, you can mark a point in your STL file, and it'll cut that into then a second STL automatically for you and make you a new model. So you can cut up a larger print and you know, have multiple STL, and it'll do that all within the slicer. So you don't have to do that in Infusion beforehand or anything like that at all. It's actually built into the slicer, which I didn't know. That was a really sort of handy tip that I saw.
Cool. Yeah, and if you don't use Prusa Slicer and you want to do that, there's another program called Mesh Mixer that will let you do all of that kind of stuff on an STL rather than having to do it in Infusion or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Definitely options. Yeah, and then you have to just work out how to glue them back together and have them be strong.
Yeah. Unless it's just a Mandalorian helmet and, you know.
I don't know about you, but if I'm making a Mandalorian helmet, I want it to be, like, bulletproof. You know,
I got to say, they look very impressive, what he's done. Really impressive. So he's then gone out and he's used filler on them and he's painted them. And it looks as if it's a proper sort of costume helmet. It does look really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so Muspel knives. It certainly is possible, but you'd want to look at the print size and if not print in multiple parts. But yeah, I could only wholeheartedly recommend the, I've got the Prusa Mini Plus here. And I've heard really good stuff about the, is it the MK3S, I think it is, which is the bigger version of the Mini.
Yeah, I've heard very good things too. I don't have direct experience with either of them, unfortunately, but hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah. Well, with your 400 million, your dream budget, you can have your own print farm of MK3Ss. Right next to the Prusa headquarters, and you can have one more than them at every point. Mm-hmm. So you've always got one more than them. Hello.
Oops, sorry, I had you muted then.
Oh, sorry.
That actually brings us to another listener question. It's not really a question. He's disagreeing with me, which I don't like.
The cheek. I know.
Bastard.
He can have his money back if he likes. He can go away and have his money back.
No, I've said this before, but I actually love being wrong. Like, it's one of those times where you learn shit. You know, if you're always right, you're never learning stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So BCT Steel said, I got to weigh in on the printing for production. I got to disagree with Aaron. I run a small print farm at my work with 3 Prusa printers for production parts. Let me know if you have any questions. And I sent him so many questions, he stopped responding to me. So... But yeah, so I was asking him, like, are they mechanical parts? Are they aesthetic parts? And he said that they're mechanical parts that he's printing that have to, you know, like, people will see them. So they have to be, like, aesthetically pleasing. And I believe he said he was printing PETG for the most part. Yeah.
Right.
And they're also printing TPU, thermoplastic urethane, for some bumpers and stuff. And he's running 0.3mm layers with a 0.6mm nozzle, which is actually the same setup that I'm doing now. It prints, you're able to print a lot faster than with a 0.4mm nozzle. And honestly, the difference in quality is very, very minimal.
Right. What about print time? How is that affecting print times?
It goes down a lot. when you go to the 0.6mm nozzle. So basically, you can still print at like a 0.2mm layer height if you want like a really fine resolution. The only way that it affects the resolution is in the X and Y. So your corners will be like a little bit more rounded. You can't necessarily make tiny details the same way. But for like most of the stuff that I do where I'm like trying to print mechanical parts, that has zero impact. And it you know, like speeds things up quite substantially. So yeah, I've enjoyed going up to a 0.6 millimeter nozzle for sure. And yeah, like I guess it makes sense. Like a build farm is totally the way to do it. Like if you look at one printer, you know, then yeah, there one printer is probably too slow for a lot of things. But
in production, yeah, yeah,
yeah. But they're so inexpensive. Like if you were to have like three Prusa Minis, that's like what yeah, they're like
less than a grand. Yeah,
yeah, they're less than a grand each. Yeah, I think they're like
well for three, I think they were.
No, they're like
less than 350, I'm sure.
Well, you're talking pounds or euros or something, aren't you?
Euros, yes.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I think in the States, I think they're about 550 US dollars each, something like that.
Okay.
So you'd be talking about, you know, 1500 bucks. But like, you get a lot of capability for 1500 bucks.
Yeah, if you're making production parts, that it's going to pay for itself very quickly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and like... minimal power, minimal space, minimal noise. Like they're very quiet. I, you know, watching videos of them running, I'm very surprised at how quiet they are. My printer is not quiet, like yeah. Not at all. I've got it in a cupboard, and if it's running overnight, we have to like keep a fan on outside the cupboard to like
really wow
make it
wow.
So we can't hear it. Yeah.
Wow.
Whilst
we're on the subject of 3D printing. Have you done any sort of vapor smoothing or anything like that at all with acetone or whatever it may be? Have you done that with any materials?
No, not yet. I am actually looking at doing that for a different material that I'm trying to work with, which is Ultim. And you can't use acetone on that. You have to use like methylene chloride, some god awful shit. So I'm not.
So you're on another list again.
Yeah, exactly.
To source this stuff.
I'm not sure if I'm going to do that. Have you done any?
I haven't, and I was just wondering if you had. And yeah, what materials it works well with and that kind of thing. I don't know. So maybe that would be something for me to sort of research this week and come back next week with some sort of findings.
Yeah, I mean, for vapor smoothing, it's mainly ABS and ASA.
Because
you're normally using acetone, and those are the materials that are, you know, acetone's a good solvent for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just started trying to print ASA, and so far I've been pretty impressed. Like I haven't been getting any warping or cracking, but there's something wrong with my print settings. I've got like holes in the model, like little like pinholes. It looks like it's retracting too much or something. It could also be moisture. When I got that filament, I noticed it seemed quite wet.
Right. Yeah.
And I did dry it, but maybe I haven't dried it enough yet.
Hmm. Okay, so we're talking about unlimited budgets again. Have you seen those like massive industrial 3D printers, and they're doing like cement and concrete and stuff, and they're putting up like houses and like in a day and stuff like that?
Right.
How cool to have something like that and just build what the hell you like? You could have like a big statue of yourself made in the middle of a shop. You could 3D print it in concrete.
That sounds very practical, cool. Craig. Great idea. Yeah,
you could like put your mask on it and your safety glasses and your apron. That would be where you'd put it all. That'd be cool.
So unlimited budget, unlimited space, and Craig has 50 statues of himself.
Yeah, on prancing horses and you know horses rearing up and all that kind of. I'd have it all.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I've been trying to 3D print sheaths for my knives.
Sheaths. Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
And
What material are you using for that?
That's part of the problem. It's a challenge, man. So, like, 3D modeling a sheath is really fucking hard.
Hmm.
Like, I'm kind of flabbergasted at how hard it is. So, like, you know, if you have two parts that are rigid and one needs to fit inside the other and then you bolt them together or something, like, that's easy. You just...
Yeah.
You know,
like a saya, that kind of...
Yeah.
Just have one, fillet it out, yeah. And like a lid. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Super easy, no problems. But the style of sheath that I make with Kydex normally, it's kind of like... it's not quite a snap fit, because a snap fit is like a specific term where two things, you know, fit together and then they have a little catch to get them out or whatever.
Yeah.
It's...
But it sort of clicks in. I know
yeah,
what you mean.
It's like... it's relying on the elastic properties of the plastic to... retain the knife, you know, it has to yeah. like deform around the knife handle as you push the knife in, and then hold it in place. And doing a 3D model of a thing that will do that is really fucking hard. Like, really surprisingly difficult. So I do have it working. I have a previous version of that sheath model that I printed in nylon that I had SLS printed. So that stands for selective laser printing, laser sintering, selective laser printing. That's a, you know, that's not a thing. So they use like a nylon powder and they fuse it with a laser, and that looks great and it does work. It's not quite perfect, the retention, but it's that, like, getting them printed that way is so expensive.
Yes, yeah.
And that model was so complicated that tuning the retention, like tuning how tightly it grips the knife, is basically impossible. Like, every time I make a tiny change, it just breaks the whole model. So I, this last week, actually, like right after we recorded the last episode, I did work on, so I've been working on my CAD drawings, and I started working on the sheath again, and I'm doing it in the same model as the knife this time, which is thankfully a much better way of doing it, just as a separate component. And so I've gotten to the point where I can make a sheath where the knife goes in, but it doesn't come back out again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I have to literally use a hammer to get the sheath off.
So is that just a case of then just playing with the scale? Because once you've got the shape, it'd be down to scale.
No. Okay. It's because the retention lips on the sheath that have to, like, elastically deform, they're just not quite the right shape. So I have to work on different ways to tune that shape. So I actually have a question for the listeners, which is that, like, so you've done some Kydex work now, Craig, right?
Yes, yeah.
So Kydex work, you know, if people are kind of on the manufacturing side, not the knife making side, basically what we're talking about is thermoforming. So you take a sheet of plastic, you heat it up, and then you, you know, either vacuum form it or you squish it with foam over a mold. And in a lot of cases, people are just using the knife itself as the mold.
Yeah.
And one of the things that that does is it produces drape. So you get, like, rounded transitions from one feature to the next as the plastic kind of lays over the knife.
Yeah. And you're not getting these hard edges. It rounds. Yeah.
Yeah. And I cannot find a single 3D modeling tool that will reproduce drape. Because, like, ideally what I should do is, you know, you have a flat sheet in your 3D model, and you click on the drape tool, and then you click your knife blade, and it drapes it over the knife blade and produces those same nice flowing contours. And then maybe you can tune, like, the amount of drape and so on. And then you would trim it to size using a 3D model and fill at the edges, and you're done. You know, like, that would basically be like the 3D modeling equivalent of the physical process, which is, in a lot of cases, that's what we're doing in 3D modeling. You know, you're making a tool and you're using that to cut a part off, or, you know, you're doing a sweep or whatever. And
yeah,
so, like, it seems like Blender, which is a 3D modeling system mainly designed for doing, like, animation and stuff.
Yeah, they have graphics, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they have a tool called Shrink Wrap, which is similar, but from what I've seen, you can't actually control, like, the amount of drape. And they did have another one that was more like drape, but again, it wasn't really configurable. And it's not in Fusion, so then I'd be, like, exporting a model and doing the process and re-importing it. So if anybody has any suggestions on, like, how to do this, like, I'm sure that in the thermoforming industry, there must be some software package that lets you, you know, simulate what's going to happen. Or maybe there isn't. I don't know. It just seems crazy that this
You'd
is such a difficult thing.
You'd think there'd be a demand for one, at least.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I hesitate to even think about, like, writing a plugin for Fusion that would do this. I mean, maybe it's possible, but, like, I barely finished high school. That's way beyond my level of math, I think. As I said, if anybody has any suggestions, like, please let me know, because it's really a surprisingly difficult problem. I wasn't anticipating how hard it would be. So I'd love to make my life easier.
Get in touch if you know any way.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some homework for the week. So I'm going to be looking into, as we say, finishing and getting good finishes on 3D prints. So whether that's wire vapors or whatever it may be. And I'll look into, you know, what's available, that kind of thing. Aaron wants to know if you can help him out. But also, we want to hear from our listeners to some weird and wacky machines that you've seen. Mm-hmm. If you see anything weird and wacky, just send it through to us on Instagram. We are xyz.cnc on Instagram. And yeah, I'm fascinated by machines. And, you know, there's plenty of Instagram accounts out there that you know, just sort of specialize in showing these wacky machines. We're aware of them. But if you see anything yourself that is interesting, let us know. It's always fun to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you all for listening. And
oh,
again,
that's a show. That's a show.
That's a show, sorry. I normally mark the end of the show by saying, that's a show. But remember also to go to your whatever podcast platform you're listening on, whether it's the website or the app or wherever it is. Give us a review. Let us know how we're going. You only want 5-star ratings, to be honest with you. If it's less than 5, really don't bother. Don't take the time out of your life.
Make sure you give me a big thumbs up too, and give Craig a big old thumbs down.
That's a show. That's a show. We shall speak to you all again soon. Thank you all very much.
Have a great week.
Oh, I pressed the wrong button there.
I thought that was like actually a fly. Yeah.
Wrong button. We shall speak to you all next week.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.